Discovery Capital Startup Sales Podcast with your host, Evan McElwain.
Welcome back to the Bowery Capital Startup Sales Podcast. I'm Evan McElwain, Bowery Capital's Director of Growth. And this week, we are joined by Dave Kinnett, CEO at Replays, to talk about how to up-level your sales demos. Great to have you on the show, Dave.
Thanks a lot, Evan. Great to be here.
So Dave, tell us a little bit about you, your background, and the company that you founded, Replays.
Yeah, sure. So, you know, I got in the sales game literally right after university. So I've been in it for a number of years now, over 25 years. And, you know, got into sales leadership probably 15, 20 years ago, and, you know, specifically in tech for the last at least decade. And so a number of SaaS organizations, and, you know, I've worked for some larger brands like Auto Trader, and back in the day I was with W.W. Grainger, where I really learned some good foundational sales skills, but really more in startup world the last handful of years. And so riding that roller coaster where you A, try and get product market fit, and then B, really try and build and scale an awesome sales org around that. And yeah, most recently in the last year and a half, I, you know, founded Replays. It's one of those things where usually the best solutions come out of an itch that needs to be scratched. And in this case, just never had enough time to actually do call coaching in a meaningful way. And so we thought, gosh, there's got to be a way to outsource this and be able to provide amazing call coaching. So that's sort of where we came up with Replays.
Awesome. And just curious, you know, there's been this big proliferation in different sales technologies. You've seen the rise of Gong and Chorus, and people seem to be paying more attention to calls and coaching. What was sort of the genesis behind Replays? Did you find that some of the existing solutions out there just didn't go that last mile where, great, you have all some of the data, but you don't necessarily have the bandwidth to dive into it and take action on it? Is that sort of where Replays comes in, or how should our listeners think about it?
That's exactly the way we think about it. So Gong, Chorus, we love them. They're, you know, most of our customers are using either Gong or Chorus. And, you know, we think of them as this awesome home gym. It's very helpful to have a personal coach to help actually utilize and maximize the home gym. So yeah, you know, the two real pain points that we solve for with sales organizations, and specifically often in tech, whether it be startup land or, you know, larger organizations as well, we solve for two things. Number one, people not finding the time to coach, right? So we often hear that the best coaching companies out there, and this has got to be less than 5% of them, man, because it's so rarely that we hear this, but probably 5% of them or less, where a sales rep's actually getting one call review per week or every 2 weeks. What we find is the average rep out there with the other 95% of companies are getting a review closer to once every 6 to 8 weeks. And that's a challenge. And so why is that? Well, we find it's one of two reasons. Either A, not enough time. And gosh, being a sales leader in very hyper growth organizations, I understand how that works. Despite your best efforts, you don't get around to it. The second is, especially in tech, there are so many individual contributors that are promoted into first-time sales leader roles, and they don't have a framework to necessarily coach to. And so they shy away from it. So Replays solves for those two things. People outsource their calls to us, and so we'll jump into their Gong or Chorus instance, and or they'll send us their Zoom calls, and our coaches, which are distributed all around the world actually, will review the calls and then do role plays with them via Zoom. And we provide them with our, you know, we've come up with 100 best practices from literally watching literally thousands of discovery calls, demo calls, closing calls. And it's that framework that they coach to.
Love it. Yeah, that makes a ton of sense. So Dave, one thing we always like to ask our guests before we really dive into the topic is, what is one thing that no one listening to this podcast will know about you?
Here we go. I try and tell anyone that'll listen about this. A bunch of other dads in the community here got involved in boxing last year. And since then, we're just loving it. And I do boxing once a week. And you know how cool it is to be able to just kind of drop in a conversation? Because I do actually try and weave it in every conversation that I'm a boxer. So there, I'm going to use this podium to say, yeah, you know what, man, I'm a boxer. No big deal.
I love it. Yeah. Cool. So Dave, let's dig in here. So to kick us off, can you just give us a high-level framework for thinking about, you know, the ideal demo structure, given the topic of today? And then maybe we can dive deeper kind of into each particular section, and we can kind of get more tactical from there.
Yeah, sure. If we look at a high level framework, I would boil it down to what happens before the call, right? The pre-call planning. I would then move to what happens at beginning a call. So important to build rapport. So many reps just actually dive straight into business and miss that part there, you know. Then making sure you're doing a crisp agenda and our mutual action plan for the discussion and, you know, stating the value, checking for acceptance, making sure that you're asking them why they joined the call. And if it was an inbound lead, why they reached out, or if it was outbound lead, why they took the call, really doing a robust discovery, then move into demo, and then always leaving enough time for pricing and next steps. And of course, if it's a more emerging markets fit kind of sales motion or buyer journey, where we're talking a $3,000 to $6,000 ACV, then it's what we just discussed. And that can all happen in a, you know, 30 to 45 minute call. But then if we're talking, a lot of our customers are also higher enterprise deals, six figures and some even seven figures. And then we're talking about doing that process over a number of different calls. Those would be the broad strokes, and always, always doing it via video as opposed to phone, if you can't be face to face, you know, would be the meta point there. So happy to dig in as deep as you want to go on any of those, but structurally, that's how we, you know, after reviewing thousands of calls, that's the framework for success that we see right there.
Great. Yeah, I think that's really helpful just to help frame the rest of the discussion today. So let's just go step by step. I think some of these we'll need to dive deeper than others. They're just kind of more to unpack, but let's give us a little bit more detail as to kind of what each step looks like. So for the first step, pre-call planning, what are some best practices there? What should that look like as folks are trying to kind of mirror some of the learnings that you guys have had from just looking at thousands of calls and how they went?
Well, it's certainly easy to start by what it shouldn't look like. And often it's unfortunate. We see this happening way too often. And hey, I've been guilty of it too, but we really try not to do that. And that is rushing onto that call without doing any prep whatsoever, right? And if it's a lead that was passed by an SDR, making sure that you've spent some time reviewing the notes that are in the CRM, or ideally having a quick discussion to get more context and more color on that prospect, and not doing that 2 minutes before the call. And then, you know, second, doing your research on the prospect and really jumping into their LinkedIn. Nothing worse than the call kicking off and the sales rep saying, "So where are you based?" I mean, right off the bat, it just demonstrates that the sales rep hasn't taken the care, time, and attention to spend a couple minutes really trying to understand where their prospect's based. And then trying to get a lay of the land on what's the most recent news for their prospect, going onto their website, looking into the CRM internally to see what other touch points there may have been with this prospect, looking at what case studies or white papers or customer stories you can point to from your existing customer base in preparation for your discussion. Nothing, especially these days, just nothing more powerful than social proof. And it amazes me how it's just so easy to serve up social proof. If you're talking to a finance company and you've got two or three powerhouses in the finance industry as customers, and you don't take the time to, you know, dig in and see that you've actually got them as customers first, talking to the account managers or customer success folks so that you've got a couple tidbits for them. And then, you know, understanding really thoroughly, do I need someone internally to join me on this call or not? We see too many times, and this is usually with newer reps, they'll engage too many resources and it's just a resource drain where the person really doesn't need to be there. So those are, you know, we've got a list of 20 that we include in our masterclass for pre-call planning. There's, I don't know, six or seven that, well, I think are important.
So moving on to the next piece, the beginning of the call. So trying to build rapport before diving into the business, as you mentioned, let's chat a little bit about that next section of the ideal demo.
I'll start with the two things that we see that we recommend not to do. Sometimes you'll get a rep that says, "Hey, I'm a real relational seller. This is my strength." Rely, unfortunately, not enough on a repeatable process and too much on their, you know, quote unquote, gift of the gab, which is an obvious trap. And so they'll take building rapport too far, right? And it's not an easy job, as you know, being a sales professional. And, you know, one of the things we need to do is be able to read the prospect often over a phone call or a Zoom call, for example, in just a few seconds to really try to understand what is their personality type. Are they the folks, you know, kind of person that do want to talk about their weekend and the kids and stuff, or would they rather just get down to business? And the relational sellers often will miss those cues where, you know, you've got a type A on the other side, key decision maker, and they're just like, Yep. And, you know, anyone watching the demo will be like, okay, this prospect really just wants to get on with things, but the rep's still asking them about, you know, where they went on vacation last summer. And so on the flip side, though, you get folks that are quite serious saying, hey, I'm a challenger salesperson. And it's almost like they feel it's beneath them to be relational sellers and that, no, you only do that if you're not a great rep. If you are a challenger type seller, and they'll usually project their own thoughts. They'll be like, you know, I personally hate small talk. Therefore, I'm sure everyone does. Therefore, I won't do it. And that's just not the case. Some people really do want to chit chat a little bit and have a conversation before diving into business. And that challenger type seller who doesn't really take the time to have a bit of situational awareness, read the prospect. And for those that do want to dive into, you know, just a quick chat, it doesn't even have to be about personal stuff. It can be about still business stuff, right? Like in part of your pre-call planning, you can see what news is topical in their industry or maybe with their company, a press release or what have you through Google Alerts. And you can reference that. But either way, it's important to not have the mindset that one or the other is right or wrong. It's really about who you're selling to and very quickly adapting to their style. So before going into the agenda, which we should probably talk about as well, that's how we think about building rapport.
And are there any kind of just broad stroke topics that you would say absolutely stay away from these? You know, maybe it's COVID, if that's just, if people are sick of talking and thinking about COVID, maybe it's politics. Like, are there any kind of just big pothole topics that people absolutely should never use as part of this pre-agenda rapport building?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's, you know, I think the golden standard is just stay away from politics. You know, you hear different people say different things about sports teams because often sports is a natural discussion point. Hey, did you catch the game last night? And if you're erring on the side of the team that they're against, hopefully that's not a bad thing, right? And I don't think it's terrible, but some folks out there say, hey, stay away from that even, because if you get a diehard person for, you know, the opposing team to your personal sports preference, that could be a problem. But I think, you know, and hey, yeah, try and stay away from the typical, hey, is it, you know, what's the weather like in your area? I mean, yeah, sometimes it's fine, but I think there's way better, more enriching conversation to be had than, you know, what's the weather been like in your city lately? So I recommend staying away from that too.
Got it. That's really helpful. So let's move on to the agenda piece. So you said crisp agenda, really important, that mutual action plan. Let's talk about that. What do folks get wrong and what are best practices there?
Two things folks get wrong. One is they'll spend too much darn time on the agenda. They'll spend like a minute and a half on it. And one of the things we get asked all the time is, how do I actually slim down the amount of time that I'm talking on a call? Because we all know that we want to get the prospect talking ideally at least 50% of the time. And one way to do that is not to spend too much time on the agenda. It's not there to be drawn out. It's there simply to give a roadmap, make sure there's alignment, and really making it about the prospect and saying, hey, what did you want to cover off? You know, this is kind of what I planned on based on what I learned about your organization, but you know, what do you want to cover? So that's number one is, you know, really make sure that you're not being too verbose. And then on the flip side, you know, do an agenda. There's a lot of folks that unfortunately still don't do agendas. I just posted on this on LinkedIn yesterday, and it just seems so common sense, right? That you do a quick framework. Our framework we recommend is three steps. It's propose an outline for the discussion, state the value, and check for acceptance. And it could be something as simple as, hey, really looking forward to, you know, giving you a demo today, but really want to tailor it to your needs. I don't want to give you the standard presentation. So it's okay with you. I'd love to, you know, probably for 15, 20 minutes here, just ask a few questions to really understand your business a little bit better. That way I can actually tailor the discussion to your needs. How does that sound? Right. So then it's, you know, the three steps, the roadmap, we stated the value. Hey, if you let me ask you some questions, I promise you, I'm not going to give you that lame, boring demo. And then you're checking for acceptance. And then follow that directly with, you know, specifically, is there anything you wanted us to cover off?
I really like that, especially, you know, we've all been on those sales calls where they just want to see the demo. They just want to see it. Maybe they read something on your site. They've done a little bit of research and they just want to see it in action. And I really like that way of setting it up with the agenda of mentioning the value and the reason of, hey, this is why I'm asking these questions. Cause it kind of preempts somebody that may just try to jump the gun and say, let's skip the discovery. I just want to see the thing. I know what I want. So I really like that piece.
Yeah, no, 100%. And, you know, now the footnote there is there's still going to be 10% of people that go, yeah, I just want the demo. And then it's successfully navigating through that, right?
Yeah, exactly. So we've gotten our CRISP agenda down, laid out that mutual action plan, gotten their acceptance of it. And then the kind of why, right? Why are you here? Why did you come inbound? Why did you join the call if it was outbound? Is it as simple as that? Is there any more to it than just kind of asking the question?
It really is that simple. You know, love to understand what piqued your interest to take the call today. And, you know, as humans, our most valuable asset is our time. And there's nothing worse than feeling as a prospect, when you're in the prospect shoes, that someone's wasting your time. So people want to know how they're spending their time. So that's why the agenda is so important. And they want to be part of a collaborative discussion on why they're there. So, and to make the time most useful, it's like, hey, if your solution has five key aspects and this person is really interested because of this one thing, then spend 60% of the time on that one thing and spend 40% of the time on those other four, right? And so many reps don't do that. They'll do their standard demo and they'll do 20%, 20%, 20%, 20%, 20%. And here, this person just really wanted to double click on that one area the whole time.
Yeah. There are so many different ways the prospect can take that question. It could be a feature they're curious about. It could be a specific use case. It could be, I've been on the receiving end of this where they say, you know what? I'm actually on this call because my superior told me I need to take a look. And so, you know, I'm just kind of checking the box. And helpful to know. Yeah, it sounds like this may be something that we need to qualify out of the pipeline pretty quickly because they aren't really taking this seriously. They don't have any, they're not really kind of bought into this challenge. They don't really care. And so it's a nice open-ended question because it can really help you figure out just the context around, you know, where is this person even coming from and where should we focus the discussion?
Yep, 100%.
So once we get past that, then we get into that actually discovery piece. And you mentioned robust discovery is a critical component here. I'd imagine this is probably where we'll spend a good chunk of time in terms of it's not quite as simple as just a one-liner question, but let's dive into what good discovery looks like. You know, maybe some of the favorite questions you all like to ask and see included. And then we can also get into kind of common mistakes and things to watch out for.
Yeah, for sure. You know, we get asked all the time, what of the hundreds of reps that we coach, what makes the difference between the ones that are on the top of the leaderboard? Because we have access to all of their sales data, right? We know who's the top of the leaderboard and we see what they're doing. And that's how we incorporate them into our best practices. And when we get asked, what do the best reps do versus the rest? There's just no question. It's the best reps do an amazing discovery, period. You know, they can be really, really great closers, but if you don't have all the right information about the need, the impact of the need, the cost of status quo, all that other stuff, it's going to be for naught. So what we recommend is actually, even before getting into discovery, just a very quick level set on, hey, how much do you know about our company? Because if they know a lot, great, that's good. It gives us a bit of context as we're going through. If they don't, it allows us to knock that one off right off the bat. There's nothing worse than when you've gone through a really good discovery and presentation and even pricing. And at the very end, and we see this a lot, the prospect says, hey, you know what? I forgot to ask, like, so how well known is your company? Like, how many customers do you have? How long have you been in business? Because what that means is this is an insecurity that this person that you want to be a potential champion for you, who's going to stick their neck out, it potentially has had in the back of their mind during this whole presentation. So what we like to do is provide, if you are a more established organization, or even if you're a year and a half in, I mean, we're a year and a half in, but we've got some amazing brands that we work with, whether it be Outreach or Vidyard, et cetera. And so we recommend right at the beginning, after you've done the agenda and asked them why they reached out, saying, hey, how much do you know about our organization? If they say not much, just be ready with a 30 to 45 second overview that doesn't sound like the marketing pamphlet, right? Doesn't sound like the marketing page, but it's a little bit of social proof. Could be the breadth of customers, dropping a couple well-known logos that align to the prospect that you're actually talking to. It could be, you know, if you publish revenue numbers, it could be the not only geography, but number of customers, whatever those real good proof points are, just getting that out there and not doing the 10-page deck on it, right? That is one part of the process that we think helps gain and build trust early before you even dive into discovery.
And it probably opens them up a little bit more as well as you kind of get into the really nitty gritty of the actual discovery questions, because you've given them more context as to why you're asking these questions in the first place. You know, if they haven't done much research, if they don't know much about your company going into it, giving them that quick level set of, hey, here's where we're coming from. It sort of gives them the context they need so that it takes them off the defensive when you start asking, because you may be asking questions about, you know, what software are you using today? What does that stack look like? You might be asking about different challenges in parts of the business. And I think it can just help alleviate some of the hesitancies there as well.
Yeah, totally. Totally. So from there, we really recommend diving headlong into discovery. And that's about understanding the organizational context of what it is that they're wanting solved, why they're wanting it solved, and then understanding the individual aspect of it. You know, what is it this person who's driving the initiative? As you pointed out earlier, is it their boss that just said, hey, go out and find a, you know, do three bids and a buy, or hey, we need this. Like, was there a compelling event or a compelling reason? And, you know, what does status quo look like? Like, if they, one question we love is, if you decide not to move forward with, is there a chance that you're not going to move forward with a solution, regardless of whether it's us or someone else? If they say, there's definitely a chance, then you really have to do an amazing job. You should regardless, but then you really, it puts a spotlight on really understanding the current pain, the cost of that pain, the impact to the business, so that when you get to the end of the call and they're like, yeah, you know, I don't know if we're going to move forward, you've got some really good data that you can use to challenge the prospect in a respectful way. Like, you know what, I respect where you're coming from, but there's dissonance for me here. When we talked earlier in our sort of initial call, you'd said that the way you're doing it today is actually, in your opinion, and your boss is extremely inefficient, and you feel that it's actually causing a bad customer experience. And you mentioned that your customer ratings have been down on G2 Crowd and that your sales have been actually declined. So if you don't go with a solution, what's your plan, right? And that's a totally fair question. But I'd say less than 10% of reps out there will actually ask that question. A, because they are too scared, or B, they actually didn't do a good enough job in discovery uncovering what the pain was.
Right. So if you don't do the discovery work up front, you don't actually have that kind of ammo in your back pocket to then present at the end to objection handle and try to get over some of those roadblocks as you're trying to get the deal done.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
You mentioned a couple there. Are there any other kind of big mistakes or common things that you see that sales reps shouldn't do that happen too often today?
Yeah, all sorts of things. Like, so number one, it's so weird how a rep may have been selling the same solution for a year, and we start coaching them and we watch their first review, and then we watch their second, and we watch their third, which is like, you know, three different discoveries they've done with three different customers, and their questions are totally inconsistent. And so, you know, if I'm that VP of sales, I'm probably going to want to make sure that my team has a standardized list of questions based on buyer persona, based on our understanding of pain point, on the compelling need and event that they might have in that specific instance. Because whatever, you know, there's always different use cases for different aspects of a solution. So use case A, all right, now we go into these five questions. Use case B, we go into these four questions. We see some of the longer tenured reps that are working for great brands that we're coaching, who they're like, yeah, I got the wheel, I got this. And they don't actually default to questions that are written down in front of them just as a reference. And what happens is they leave one or two key questions out, it's left a massive hole in their discovery. And that will impact their ability to actually move the deal forward down the road. So I think number one, make sure that, I've been doing this for years, I still write down my questions. I might not write down, you know, 10 questions. I might write down the five that I got to make sure I absolutely ask by the end of this call based on the pre-call planning I've done. So that would be one big one for sure.
Great. Yeah, I think that's really helpful. And, you know, one of the things as we're kind of rounding out discovery here, that this is just reminding me of, is I had a brief stint in product management at my last startup. And one of the things it taught me was the importance of staying in the problem space as long as possible. Because if you spend enough time in the problem space and you really understand the problem, the solution often becomes very obvious and easy. And so it has so many parallels with sales and running a really effective, tight process. If you spend enough time in discovery and you do it well and you ask the right questions and you uncover the right pain points and needs and those different levers, it makes the selling process way easier to where you're just helping them kind of connect the dots in their mind. So love that, you know, that's a huge emphasis for you all, and also just the pieces around the importance of structure and some really lightweight documentation. It's something that we preach all the time with our portfolio companies. It becomes such a high leverage tool that makes it much easier to train and scale your team. And also just makes it easier to try to troubleshoot and figure out where are we going wrong. If you have their questions written down and you realize you're consistently not getting at a certain piece of information by a certain part of your pipeline, it's easy to tweak, right? You tweak the question document that everyone's using, and all of a sudden you've fixed that. So really like all those points.
Yeah, no, it's a great point. And one area we find that reps in particular typically have a challenge drilling down on is quantification or metrics. And it's one thing to understand what the pain is, who's feeling it, and then getting into impact is the next step, but then actually quantifying it. Because how the heck are you supposed to sell something in the end if you can't paint a picture, hopefully an ROI picture of, hey, here's before, here's now, here's today, and here's the value of today, here's your opportunity cost by staying with your current solution, and here's the picture we're painting current state tomorrow. And the delta between that is the value that you provide. And how can you effectively address any pricing objections at the end if you're not able to articulate that value delta? So quantification is another way during discovery that we see reps shy away from and not ask, unfortunately, the tough questions.
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting point. And also, depending on the answer, it can also be a good indicator, are you at the right person or not? Because if they can't answer some of those questions, it may not be information that they're privy to, and you may need to get to somebody else, another stakeholder internally, in order to actually kind of get some momentum in this deal and move it along.
And it's funny how, you know, sales reps, again, as humans, I think we tend to project a lot. We tend to think, well, I think this way, therefore other people do too. And often reps think, oh man, I'm inconveniencing them. I really, my boss, my leader has asked me to do 10 to 15 minutes of discovery and ask these 15 questions. And I'm just going to do 5 minutes and ask these five questions because I know it's just going to piss off my prospect if I ask all 15. And you know, they couldn't be more wrong a lot of the time, because the way we need to change the framework of our thinking on this, our mental model, is we're here to help the prospect. And the only way we're going to effectively do that is really understanding where they're at today, what the challenges are, and then tailor a solution to them. How we help reps along with that is A, by just reminding them that, listen, you're there helping them, and it's okay to remind the prospect of that, right? So have some really good bridging statements 7 minutes into your discovery. Things like, oh man, thanks a lot for bearing with me on these questions. I know it's a lot, but trust me, I'm really doing this to just really make the most of your time, because I'm going to tailor our discussion later based on these. And then, you know, a couple minutes later, you can be like, you know what, I just want you to know we're almost done these questions. Thanks for bearing with me. But when you do a couple check-ins like that and you make it somewhat conversational, you maybe weave in a small, quick cut, what we call a customer story soundbite, which is a quick, you know, under 1 minute customer story with a framework that we recommend, that smooths things over. You give them a couple deposits as you're going through, not just taking. And so those are some of the replays best practices that we really work with our sales reps on.
All right, so let's get into the demo portion. You mentioned earlier, depending on the complexity of your deals and the size of your ACV, sometimes this may happen on the same call, could be a totally separate call. But what are some things that folks, you know, should keep in mind as they're trying to figure out, hey, what's the best way that we should be doing the demo portion of these calls?
Right, so for the folks that are listening, there's probably gonna be two buckets. There's gonna be you know, some folks are in one bucket where they actually don't have a solution to demo, right? They may be services, maybe something that they actually have to present a PowerPoint, make it more conversational. And then there's a bucket of folks that, you know, they actually can do a demo. The principles are the same for both. And that is, number one, the biggest fault that we see, or trap that we see reps fall into, is they won't check in enough, and they'll make it, like, you know how we always hear, and we agree with this at Replays, that you really want to try and make it where your prospect's talking at least 50% of the time. Well, a lot of reps say, okay, well, that's fine for the discovery, but in the demo, you just can't do that. And I disagree with that. You know, I think you can make it conversational. So the first, again, about shifting mental models, the first thing we encourage our coachees to think about is don't think of this ever as a demo. Think of it as a conversation. And it's supported maybe by a PowerPoint, maybe by a demo, but it's a conversation. And so many reps will talk for 5 minutes and not come up for air. And then after they come up for air, they'll say, any questions or make sense? And 90% of the time, the people are just in a zone that are listening. They've been checking Slack. They've been checking their texts and stuff, which is the other reason why video call is so important, because, you know, at least it's more engaging when you can see each other. What we recommend is every minute and a half to 2 minutes, the sales rep saying, doing what we call meaningful check-ins, which isn't just any questions or, you know, make sense. It's, you know, based on what you saw on this feature the last, you know, couple minutes, love to get a sense as to how that compares to the demo you said you had from our competitor early this morning. Or, you know, based on this one area here, it really sounds to me like, based on what you told me earlier, this is going to help your VP of sales and their sales team. But do you see it that way? And if so, how do you think they'll use it? You know, so then we're getting a discussion happening and we're checking in with them meaningfully. Because the worst thing that could possibly happen is you get to the end and you say what every rep says, which is, you know, are you leaning in or what did you think? Or so what are your thoughts? And the worst thing that could happen is for the sales rep to actually not know. The sales reps we coach, by the end of the call, they know exactly where the prospect stands. And not just the one person but that's talking the most on the prospect side, but all four people, because we teach them to check in with them, you know, in a meaningful way. And thus, we really get to address their objections, their thoughts, their questions in a meaningful way as we navigate through the conversation. So that there's one other best practice I'd like to share with you, but that's one big one, meaningful check-ins.
I really like that point. What was the other one that you wanted to share?
The other one is something we call, are you training or are you selling? And what we mean by that is, I can't tell you how many demos our coaches have reviewed where if you were watching it and we told you that was actually a customer success agent, not a sales rep, and the customer success agent was actually onboarding the customer and training them on how to use it versus a sales rep selling, you'd believe me, because you'd be like, yeah, they're really going into crazy detail here. And so we see reps falling into the pitfall of getting so excited about their demo that they're going into, oh, look what happens when you right click this and look at this drop down. And it's like, no, wait, we lost sight of the fact that there's a pain here that you're trying to address. There's a use case that you're trying to reference. And instead of using, let's say, a meaningful customer story or really tying the need you learned 15 minutes ago in their demo, in their discovery rather, to this one aspect, you're actually just showing them how this thing clicks through. And that is just a big miss that a lot of reps do. So for those of that are listening right now, on your next demo, or if you're a sales leader and for your next reps training, mention this, ask them, are you selling or are you training?
Yeah, I love that. It goes hand in hand with, if you know, if you're just heads down and so focused on getting through it and just showing all the different features that, you kind of get into this mode of as if they're going to be the end user tomorrow. First you need to get them to say yes to actually deploy it internally.
Yeah, exactly.
Is there anything else on the demo front that we should touch on before we move on to pricing and next steps?
In order to keep it moving, I'll just say, the one footnote is the best reps that we see that are crushing it include 3 to 5 customer stories in a 45-minute to hour long call. And most reps that we see when we first start working with them aren't actually doing any customer stories. So we've got a whole sort of, for those that are listening, if they want to sort of get some free resources from us, they can hit me up on LinkedIn. I'm happy to share our customer story soundbite sheet, where they can sort of see our training module on that for free. But that's one area that I highly recommend you double down on, because it just, those stories really provide social proof and they just resonate.
Cool. Yeah, and it sounds like it's not only helpful in the very beginning of the call when you're doing that level set before you kind of dive into discovery, but also just throughout the demo as a way of kind of mixing it up and keeping them engaged.
Yeah, exactly.
Cool. All right, so Dave, you mentioned the last step of sort of the ideal demo call is the pricing and next steps. Let's dig into that a little bit. What shouldn't that look like? What should reps be trying to mirror when it comes to best practices?
Well, what it shouldn't look like, and unfortunately so often it does, is there's 1 minute to go and the rep goes, oh, you know what? Gosh, we just finished the demo and we're out of time. Hey, listen, I'll send you the pricing, you know, ping me back. Let me know what you think, but hey, thanks for your time. it's cringeworthy. And we see it far more often than I care to admit. So the best practice is really control the call to the point that you're leaving enough time at the end that you know you're going to require for pricing. We also recommend don't send them the pricing until you've actually presented it. That way you can talk about value. That way you can address objections. That will improve the odds that you're not going to get ghosted by the prospect. Make sure that you are really understanding fully, if you didn't do it in your discovery, where they're at in their decision-making process. I'll share a replace best practice we call pretend you're leading the post-call huddle. And what that is like, Evan, think of back to when maybe you've been evaluating a software. You and your team are like, hey, we need to look at something different for our CRM or for our cadences or whatever it is. And you go out and you review a demo and a couple demos, and then you'll probably have a huddle with your team after, right? And be like, hey, what did you think of that one pitch? And you know, so we call that the post-demo huddle. Well, as a seller, wouldn't we love to be in the room as a fly on the wall when that's taking place? Well, we can't be. So why not create that environment? So in your last 10, 15 minutes, whatever it is with the prospect, pretend as though you've actually been given the conch. You've been given the authority to lead the post-demo huddle. And ask them questions like, hey, I'd just love to go around the room here. Like right now, if you were to make a decision, would you be looking at choosing us? And if so, love to hear why. And if not, why not? And what are your thoughts on the pricing? How does that compare with the company you said you were talking to earlier on today? And all the questions that you might actually do if you're leading the post-demo huddle yourself, if you're being sold to, take the initiative to do that as a salesperson. And I tell you, the minute that our sales reps that we coach shift their thinking into not just simply, okay, we're doing pricing and next steps, but we're leading a meaningful post-call huddle in the call. And of course, the prospect doesn't know you're doing that. They just think you're being helpful. And that is a game changer. So that's one thing we strongly recommend.
I love that piece. And it also, it just ties so well into actually getting next steps. Because if you go around the room in this kind of virtual, you know, post-call huddle, and you get the buy-in, you get the hesitancies, and if what you're hearing is positive, it makes it a lot easier to then say, great, well, if we're all on board, you know, let's boom, like whatever the next step is, kind of get that locked in, or at least get that verbal commitment that they're up for it.
That's right. And then the final one, because I know we're running short on time, is just always getting that next meeting on the books. We all know we should do it, right? But I'd say less than 30% of reps that we first start coaching do it. 100% of reps after we finish coaching do it. And, you know, it's just such a no-brainer in terms of helping to gain deal momentum. And, you know, reps often ask us, well, how should you say it? So it's, you know, something as simple as, hey, our customers find it super helpful as they're going through the decision-making process to just have a placeholder on the books. You mentioned that you're talking to, you know, your leadership group tomorrow. I mean, if we just have, let's say, a quick 15-minute or half-hour placeholder in the calendar, even if you're not able to keep it, just let me know in advance. But that way we can address any questions that come up, and we're not going back and forth on email. How does that sound? 80% of the time or more, they're going to say yes. And, you know, if you're not doing it, your competitor is. So don't let your competitor be the one that's, you know, keeping up deal momentum. Be the one to do it yourself.
Got it. So always get that counter invite sent out before you hop off the call, even if it's a placeholder that you need to work out later.
Absolutely.
Cool. We've walked through each step one by one. We've gotten really tactical on what that should look like, what it shouldn't look like. Talked through some of those common mistakes. So when you look at the demo holistically, if you had to kind of whittle it down to maybe the top mistakes or top tips as folks are trying to up-level their demo game, what would those be?
Well, try and stay away from too many PowerPoint slides. And if we look at the category of folks that, you know, that bucket of folks we talked about a minute ago who don't have a choice, they don't have a demo to actually show, maybe it's a services business, then, you know, throw up a few meaningful slides like case studies that you walk through, and don't rely on the graphics, don't rely on the images. Like you as a sales rep, me as a sales rep, we're in our seat, we're paid because we're good communicators. So communicate it, right? There's nothing worse than saying, oh, I'll send you that case study. There's a case study we got, let me send it to you. They're not gonna open it 90% of the time, right? So I guess number one would be don't PowerPoint them to death. Number two, make sure that you're incorporating customer stories, do meaningful check-ins, and make it about them and their needs, not about the other last 25 people. Every single demo should be different that a sales rep does based on the needs of the person they're in front of that day.
Well, Dave, before we wrap up, are there any kind of final thoughts, tips, or tricks that you want to leave folks with to summarize? You mentioned some free resources that you all offer that, that folks can take advantage of. You know, obviously feel free to plug anything here that, that folks would find useful.
Yeah, cheers. Thanks. I appreciate that, Evan. For folks that are listening, if any of these, I think maybe we've maybe shared 10 of our 110 best practices. If you're interested in the other 100, we actually have a masterclass that's rolling out on September 15th, and it's 110 2 to 8 minute videos. And you know what, for the folks that are part of the Bowery Capital community and audience, I'm happy to offer a 50% off. If people want to ping me on LinkedIn, that's probably the best way to get a hold of me. Dave Kennett, K-E-N-N-E-T-T, replays. And we'll make sure we jot you down as having an early bird pass. You don't have to prepay, just express interest, and we'll make sure you're on that early bird list. So I think we're going to be rolling it out for $497. So it'll be half price for your group.
Amazing. Well, Dave, well, I've certainly learned a lot. So I know our listeners have too. This has been fantastic. Thank you so much for sharing all these nuggets with us. We really appreciate you coming on the show.
Oh, thanks, Evan. It was awesome being on. Thanks so much.
And that's our show. So if you liked this episode and you want to hear more, subscribe to the Bowery Capital Startup Sales Podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. We'll see you next week. And incidents arose from circumstance. One thing led to another.